As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
We've got some people listening in, Farhan, so let's welcome them to the VanCast Live. We'll give it a Twitter crowd to perhaps stream in. I'm watching the Mariners, by the way. How'd they blow this lead to Texas? My goodness.
Well, they were up 7-6, gave one up in the eighth, and then the second one came in.
Sorry, Farhan. You've mistaken me for someone who actually cares. You know why this lead?
You brought it up. Well, they just tied it.
It happens to be on in the Kraken's portion of the press box, Kraken management's portion of the press box, where I have seated myself. Anyway,
well, they just tied it, so they haven't blown it yet. We're good. We're in great shape. Come on, magic number's down to two, buddy.
They haven't blown it yet. Well, look, the Canucks blew a third period lead tonight in preseason action at Rogers Arena. To me, that doesn't really matter. Like, I saw a lot that I liked today. I thought Nils Höglander played great. I thought Linus Karlsson exceeded all reasonable expectations. I thought Andrei Kuzmenko was electric. And Elias Pettersson, absolutely dominant. I also had some time for Connor Garland's game. I don't think that line played particularly well, but Connor Garland did a ton of stuff that I found hilarious, fun. He had one play in particular where the net came off its moorings, and he personally put it back, then set himself up in the slot and got a high-danger chance.
That's right.
If he had scored that goal, I would have been so pumped up. Like, I would have just been like, that is amazing. You not only manufactured a goal with your play and positional work and your shot, but you literally kept the play alive by putting the net back on. I thought Jack Rathbone played well. I thought Kyle Burrows played well. Basically, it takes me a lot of thinking before I get to a Canucks player who didn't play well. Like, Artur Sylovs obviously did not sort of build on his impressive third period against Calgary. You know, there were a couple that he'd certainly want to have back. Tanner Pearson and JT Miller looked like they were easing themselves in. But, you know, I don't worry about that at all. Danny DeKeyser and Tucker Poolman, I guess you could say, didn't play particularly well. I don't think the team's defense as a whole, like the team's defensive play as a group, was very good. And, you know, I guess there's a few guys who were quiet. Like, I still haven't seen a ton from Dakota Joshua, although he did have an impressive fight and he did land that massive hit on Michael Kempney. You know, I guess Will Lockwood sort of looked like he was battling through a back injury toward the back end of the game. I guess he didn't look great. Like, I don't know, like, whatever, who cares? It's preseason. And yet I go downstairs and Bruce Boudreau is as downtrodden, Farhan, as I have
Heard the clips yet.
Like borderline despondent. Can't stop talking about the results. You know, finally, I sort of am like, Bruce, it's preseason. Like, what do you have to see? What do you want to see over the balance of the next four games? And I'm literally saying this to just be like, why are you so mad, bro? Right? Like, I'm just trying to find a tactful way to ask him why he's so mad. And I sort of thought that he'd kind of shut it down, and he didn't. He said that they played lazy. He said that what he wants to see is them play a complete game, that they haven't seen that. Talked about habits and bad habits creeping in, and obviously I picked at that with my follow-up. Like, he was really annoyed by how this team performed today. Really annoyed. Like, really did not feel like they played well enough. He was flush. I'm not kidding you, Farhan. I have never seen Mr. Positivity, Mr. Good Vibes, Bruce Boudreau, so down as I did after the Canucks blew a 3-1 lead in the third period of a preseason game against a AHL-level Seattle Kraken team, you know, the second least impressive or the second most impressive team or the second least impressive team, excuse me, from the Seattle area tonight.
You know what? And Seattle's going to win this game, so then you'll have to eat that. But hey, look, you know, watching that, I get why he's behaving the way he is or reacting the way he is, because I think, you know, you want to send a bit of a message that, yeah, the preseason, I think he knows this doesn't matter. But it would be so easy to get caught up in all the other stuff. It would be so easy to get caught up in what Andre Kuzmenko did, what the power play did, how Thatcher Demko looked in the first two periods, what Quinn Hughes continues to do while playing on the right side and basically playing on every side because he's basically a rover for this team. You know, it would be easy to get caught up into a lot of that. And I think for him, he probably wants, you know, the complete win. And I don't mean, you know, 2 points, just a completeness of effort. Finish the game well in the third period. Archer Silov's play better than you did earlier on. You know, just all of those little pieces, you know, tighten up defensively. DeKeyser and Pullman need to be better. Like, there's a bunch of little things that you can... This is the time to get angry. Because when you get into the season, you know, a lot of times... You know, Bruce, right? Like, even when things went bad last year, which didn't happen that often, he still spun it as positively as humanly possible. I think right now he wants to set the culture and set the expectation and be demanding and make sure everybody knows that he can be demanding. Because last year was all a love in, right? Everything was the house's money, it felt like. So, you know, I'm with you, right? I thought there was a lot to like, right? I mean, I think we're all keeping a close eye on the newcomers. Andre Kuzmenko in this game, Ilya Mikheyev when he gets back into the lineup, hopefully as early as next week. Anybody that's new that, you know, we're looking at where they might fit. Players like Nils Höglander, there's storylines there. There's storylines around Pod Colson. You know, we don't necessarily look at Pettersson and Hughes and Miller as closely because we know how good they are, but yet they still find a way to catch our attention and impress us. So I'm with you. I think there was a lot to like because I think those are the things that we've been looking at. You know, Kuzmenko really impressed me. You know, he got the first two goals, which was great, but he created. He was aggressive with his shot. He didn't waste a lot of time, even though he wasn't as accurate with it the second and third period. He wasn't afraid to be aggressive. So, there, you know, I thought there was a lot to like in his game. Quinn Hughes just seems to be getting more and more comfortable playing on the right side.
I disagree with you. I have zero time for this. I don't want to be.
Wait a minute!
About
you just said you liked all of his stuff. You said you liked it all of it. Why is Bruce upset?
I always like Quinn Hughes. To be clear, I just really like him on the left side, and you know his best moments tonight all came when he was, as he put it, surfing and moving back to the left side where he's outrageously dynamic. And I don't see a path to this team maximizing what they could be this season if Quinn Hughes isn't, you know, a top 10 defenseman in this sport. And I think to be that, he's got to be in the place where he makes the most dynamic stuff happen. That's on the left side of the ice. That's just what I want to see. I want to see Quinn Hughes do Quinn Hughes stuff.
I think Quinn Hughes on the right side is still Vancouver's best defenseman on the right side, right? Like, wherever he plays, he's going to be that good. You know, I didn't like him on the tying goal, right? Because if he is not playing on his offside, he might be able to corral that kind of giveaway by Tanner Pearson and be able to exit the puck, right? But it was a little tougher being on the side that he was there. It was kind of the one time I noticed it. Offensively, I thought he was fine. And truthfully, his ability to surf in the offensive zone, particularly on the power play, right? I mean, I thought there were some moments where he moved all over the place there, but he saw some offensive zone pressure shifts that he and Ekman-Larsson basically switched sides, and then they switched back. And then, you know, I liked his aggressiveness, and I liked his creativity. So I'm not down on the right side experiment. I just think there's so many other things that, you know, you could potentially quibble with, but... I don't know. I've got more time to see more of it.
Sorry. He's going to be great wherever he plays. He's just better on the left. Okay. Just leave it. Just leave it. Leave it where it is. And more than that, I think with Dermott being hurt, you know, how do you build a left side? Like, are you really going to sign Danny DeKeyser and play him with Tucker Pullman, because I didn't have a ton of time for it tonight, and I definitely am not going to have time for it when the games count. Jack Rathbone looks good, but you want him on a third pair. You want him on a third pair unless injuries strike, and then you want him to seize a top four role and never let go. You know, like that's the way you want Jack Rathbone to scale up. You don't want to throw him and rely on him in top 4 minutes right off the bat, in my view. And you know, I think if you do and he disappoints, you've set him up for that. So, you know, I like at the end of the day, I think it's we always want this silver bullet for the Canucks to have improved their defense core, right? Like Nate Schmidt, improve the defense core. Like Pullman, improve the defense core. Silver bullet. Hughes on the right side, improve the defense. You know, they didn't improve the defense core. They did nothing to it. They have Jack Rathbone, who's a year older and coming and looking good. So that's great. That's your upside. But, like, you can't tell me that the way that the Canucks lined up today, right, put in Myers wherever you want with Rathbone or with DeKeyser, right, you can't tell me that that's better than running out Hughes, Schenn, Myers, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Jack Rathbone, Travis Dermott, Luke Schenn, and Tucker Pullman in some combination and just being like, well, we didn't improve the defense core. You know, like, it is what it is. Like, that's going to be their best option. Quinn Hughes is going to be at his best on the left side. I've seen enough now through scrimmages in the preseason that I feel pretty confident about that.
Yeah, so he will be at his best on the left side, but collectively, can they not, when Dermott is healthy, collectively, can they not be better with him on the right side and creating that kind of depth, right? I mean, I got to be honest, like, there is a big part of me that looks at Jack Rathbone, and while he doesn't have Quinn Hughes' ceiling, he also didn't necessarily have Quinn Hughes' floor when he first came in, right? And Hughes was so dynamic that they were willing to live with the warts. I think if you let Rathbone play in a second pair, which I think at some point this season he's going to, I think he's going to surprise you with how good he is. And he's not Quinn Hughes, but I just think that he doesn't need to be completely protected. He's been brought along slowly enough, as I see it. But I will say this.
But he hasn't had games. Like, he just hasn't had games.
Well, no, you're right.
Because of the pandemic, it's been
sort of weird. 64 games that he's played in the last 2 years. I mean, he might as well have been what his college career is. And that is difficult. But, you know, and I look at Danny DeKeyser. I want him to sign him, but I want him to keep him in the minors. Right? I mean, do I think he's one of the top seven defensemen here? No, I don't. But I do think he's one of the top 10 in the organization if they sign him. And you need that many to get you through a season. And I'd rather look at him at this point than Guillaume Brisebois, right? Because you know what you've got with him. And he's young, up-and-coming prospect.
We're not even talking about Brisebois. Hey, Devin G says, sees him play less than 20 minutes of 5-on-5 on the right side. I've seen enough. How was your first 20 minutes of writing, Drance? Terrible. It was really bad, like, without question.
Oh, it was epic. It was epic.
It was terrible. But Quinn Hughes is special. I'm just a hack. Like, you know, Quinn Hughes is special. Like, let him be special where we know he is special. Like, I don't know, especially when playing him on the right side doesn't feel like it addresses anything. Like, it doesn't make their team better, in my view. It just creates this giant gaping hole on the second pair. Like, it's not like they, you know, have this perfect second pair that only works if one of OEL and Hughes can play on the right side. Like, they don't have that either. Like, it's, you create another problem and you neuter one of your best players a little bit. Like, even if it takes him 30 games to figure it out and then he does figure it out, like, is he going to be better there than he is on the left side? Like, that's what I struggle with. It's not about whether or not I think he can do it. I know he can do it. It's that I love what he does already and I don't see what the benefit is in terms of the down lineup effects of having him play the right side. Like, that was sort of my only thing that I'm coming away from tonight really worried about is, you know, and honestly, this has been a creeping feeling that I had over the past week in general, which is, you know, for all that we've talked about the defense, like, it looks the way I expected, and that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, look, there's so many ways to look at it, right? It's where you see, you know, it's the Tucker Pullman effect. It's where you see a guy like Travis Dermott fitting in, right? Because is he better on the left? Is he better on the right? You know, do you worry about him being a top four defenseman, you know, on that second pair as the second left D? There's a lot of ways to look at it in terms of how it affects other players, and it's going to take us a while to figure that out. But, you know, for me, like, is he better on the left side? Absolutely. But I certainly think he can help this team on the right side, and I think he might be able to bring out the best in Oliver Ekman-Larsson as well. So, I mean, we'll see. Look, we're going to be debating this for a long time because I think you and I both agree that they're not walking away from this experiment anytime soon. So this
I don't know about that. I don't know if you heard Bruce Boudreau's availability after. I know you did actually after morning skate today.
I did, yeah.
But he said, you know, well, we'll at least go with it tonight. You know, like he seemed less committed to it today, pregame, than he had at any point. And tonight, you know, he said, oh, Quinn Hughes would be a star if he played center. And he's right, by the way.
He is.
I mean, I don't know that this look has necessarily got the leash that I thought it did going into today. And so, you know, I'm genuinely curious to see exactly where Hughes lines up when next this team hits the ice. All right, let's play a game. Let's play a game with our 160.
Real quick, before we get off, okay. Quinn Hughes, how about his ice time? Like, holy cow, it's game two of the preseason.
Yeah, but Quinn Hughes plays all day, man. Like, I don't, you know, Quinn Hughes can play all day. That's who he is. I think he wants it. He talked post-game about wanting to get the reps. You know, you get the bumps, you go through it. He's, you know, you haven't played hockey in 5 months. You haven't played in this competitive environment in 5 months. It's good to get your feet under you. You know, he's like, I don't need any more games to be comfortable on the right side. I am comfortable on the right side, which matches everything he said, you know, about the experiment to this point. He likes it. He insists that he likes it. I believe him that he likes it. But, you know, I think he wants to play. He wants to get into games before they count. And, you know, he was pretty clear about that. I don't think Quinn Hughes minces words. And so it goes. Hey, let's play a game now, okay? I want to play a game. All right? We're going to play Trending Up, Trending Down, okay? And I want our audience to participate as well. I'm going to bring up a name, Farhan, and then I want you to say whether you think his case to make the opening night lineup and or his overall form in the case of the Locks is trending up or trending down at this point. And we're not just talking about tonight, although obviously we're going to weight what we just saw heavily. We're talking about the entirety of training camp preseason to this point. So you pick whether you think a guy's trending up or down, and I want our audience to chime in too, and if you offer commentary, we'll read some of those as we go. Sound good?
Let's do it.
All right, trending up, trending down. Let's start with Nils Höglander.
Throughout training camp, and I think the first preseason game, he was trending up. I think the opportunity around him with the injuries is also trending him up. I thought today he was kind of ordinary.
You thought he was ordinary today?
I thought he was better in the first preseason game. And certainly in training camp, you know, from everything I'd read and heard, he was setting the world on fire in training camp. So I thought he was better in the first game. So I don't want to say he's trending down, but I think he was trending a little higher a few days ago.
See, I liked his game, and we've got some people who agree with you. Ricky M. and Rohan and Justin M. All agree with down. So I'd be curious if you guys would elaborate as well. I saw a lot to like today, particularly because he was playing on more of an energy style line. Like, you know, to me, it felt like the Canucks were creating a separate branched sort of path for him to be in the opening night lineup, which is, you know, whether or not Besser and Mikhaev return quickly, you know, if you can function as sort of an energy line guy, you know, that's a line you can play on if you play a certain way. And I just thought that he aced that test. He was going around winning a ton of battles, playing, you know, with a ton of speed. I felt like you could have played a lot of his shifts to, like, the Woody Woodpecker soundtrack. Like, just the way that he was, like, stick lifting and robbing pucks off guys along the wall. I loved what I saw from him today. For me, he's a trending up. Let's get to some of the commentary. He was good today, says Jake L. Cut him some slack. He's playing with Oman and Joshua.
That is fair.
Ryan B. says Höglander definitely trending up, was flying and generating tonight. Wish he would have been in Carlson's spot with EP40. Let's get to Linus Carlson in a bit. I want to find someone who said that he was trending down. This is bizarre world. I always agree with Farhan and never with Drance, but agree with Drance on Hogs. Okay, that wasn't someone who disagreed with. Here's Rohan. I know that Rohan says it's a fair point, but under the assumption he'll be top nine due to injuries, he didn't look impactful in that sense.
That wasn't his role tonight, though. In fairness to,
no, yeah. It wasn't. But I also think, you know, if the role that is his is to be in the top nine and he wasn't given that look, and Linus Carlson passed the eye test, and we'll get to Linus Carlson next, Yeah, I guess that's the argument for him trending down. It's like, why didn't he get the shot, considering that right now it feels like that's where he's going to go. All right, Linus Karlsson trending up or trending down, Farhan? And our audience, you guys tell us too. What do you think?
I think he's trending down. I think what we saw in the last preseason game was good. I think he's getting ample opportunity. He doesn't look as creative or as dynamic as I thought he would. I thought the chemistry with Pettersson's kind of driving a lot on his own. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's just making plays and beating people one-on-one and attacking. So, you know, I don't know that they're necessarily using each other as well as they potentially could. So, I don't know. I didn't see as much as I thought I would from Karlsson tonight.
Interesting. So a lot of our listeners agree with you. Arthur's neutral. Bob C's down. Del J's neutral. Down, 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 down. Interesting.
I didn't think he had a huge opportunity to make this team anyway. I think he's just hoping for one of those spots that will get him one of the first or second call-ups at some point early in the year as needed. I don't know that there's a path to an opening night lineup spot for him this year.
Yeah, I wonder if Karlsson is down because people had high expectations. I don't know if a lot of people have seen him play, right? He played in Calgary in the preseason opener, and that wasn't televised. I feel like for a lot of fans, people saw him for the first time today, so they noticed some of the pace issues. They noticed that, like, when he makes plays, even when they're high-skilled plays, they don't look easy, in part because he's not arriving first, right? In part because he's always being harassed because his pace isn't quite there. But for me, who's been watching him play almost every day this week, this was the fastest he looked. This was the first time that his pace was high enough that I could see him being an option to play some NHL games. So I actually came away today thinking, hey, you know, this is a guy who could maybe, if they needed 10 minutes in sort of a middle six-ish role because of injuries at some point this season, this guy might just have enough foot speed to pull it off. Talking to a pro scout in the press box today, they called him one of those classic, ugly, effective players. And I thought that was dead on point. That matched my impression for me anyway, partly perhaps because my expectations are lower than some of our listeners. I thought he was up. So that's my view of him. All right, let's move on. How about Dakota Joshua?
Dakota Joshua had the one fight, which, you know, everybody was impressed by, and fair enough, right? He tried to be physically engaged. Overall, he left me wanting a little bit more. I think I had big expectations for him, even in a smaller role, you know, because he's basically got a spot to lose, right? And he hasn't been a regular NHLer, but they've set him up to make this team. And I don't know, I expected more from him. Outside of the fight, I'm not sure I really noticed him that much.
I noticed the big hit on Michael Kempney.
There was that, yeah.
At the end of the day, the thing with Joshua is, he can throw a clean, heavy hit on a guy like Kempney, a veteran player, and you feel it rattle the boards, and you see that it rattled the player, and it looks miserable to have been on the other side of, and who else on this team can do that?
No, look, again, he's got a spot, and he's got a unique skill set for this team. So I'm not suggesting for a second that he shouldn't make the team. I just thought he would be a little bit more for the ice that he got and the role that he got. And you're right, that one hit was very, very noticeable, right? I mean, that was a hit we've been clamoring for from a lot of different people who've had the big forward label with this organization in the last couple of years. So I think he's going to be fine this year. But like I said, I thought there'd be a little bit more there tonight. I thought he'd be in on the forecheck more. I thought he would be more physical outside of one big impact hit and one fight.
We definitely haven't seen much with the puck from him, but at the end of the day, the size-speed combo and the ability to bring something different, I think, is enough. Like, I think it's enough for me to answer trending up on Joshua, just because if you wanted to see, like, the thing that he can do that no one else on this roster can do, you saw it tonight. And so for me, that's enough to have him trending up.
Well, regardless of what he looked like tonight or his overall impact tonight, he's going to make the team, and he should make the team, right? In that fourth-line role, in a limited-minutes role, he's going to be an effective player, and he's going to, like you said, he's going to do something that others can't do on this team.
Fair enough. So last thing, though, on Joshua, because I always got to bring it to Cap Minutia. At the end of the day,
I'm working on my maniacal laugh since you're not on the VanCast regularly.
Did you ever listen to the full 20 seconds worth of me maniacal laughing that I sent you for the promo that you and Harmon cut?
I did, and you probably did that in like one take, right? Like that would have been just
one take.
That's your natural, right?
Oh yeah, one take. I just like, well, what happened was I started fake laughing for you, for my good friend Farhan, and then so if anyone hasn't seen the promo that Farhan cut with Harmon, you know, Farhan messages me out of the blue one day and he says, "I need your maniacal laugh to end this video. Do you have any clips of it?" And I'm like, "I don't, but I'll just record myself doing it. I obviously have a voice recorder on my phone. I use it every day." So I just turn my voice recorder on and I start fake laughing. And then my wife walks into the room because she hears me just like fake laughing and she sees me holding my phone up laughing like an idiot. And so she actually starts laughing. And then I started real laughing for about 10 seconds. And that's why I think the audio that I sent you was actually pretty good.
Perfect. By the way, hang on. Wait. Mariners won 10-9 in the 11th. JP Crawford with the RBI. Magic number down to one, big boy.
Hey. Bad news for the baseball world, but good news for my parlay.
There you go. Great news for the baseball world. We get to cover playoff baseball in Seattle.
Hey, so anyway, back to Cap Minutia. Dakota Joshua at the end of the day costs an extra $70,000 over what a guy like Phil DiGiuseppe, who's next up, by the way, on our trending up, trending down list, costs. And as these injuries pile up for the Canucks, right, it gets harder and harder to sort out your opening day lineup. And that is one area that I'm wondering could matter if Dakota Joshua leaves any doubt in the minds of Canucks management. For all that he has done and all that he showed tonight, which is completely unique relative to his teammates in this group, right? I still sort of wonder if he hasn't done enough to leave no doubt and perhaps leave the door open for a guy who perhaps fits a little bit better in, based on their cap picture overall, a guy like a Phil DiGiuseppe. Trending up, trending down, Farhan. Phil DiGiuseppe.
Can his decision really be made on $70,000?
Absolutely.
Wow.
They have to get as close to the cap as they can, close to the upper limit as they can.
To use all of the relief from the Michael Ferland contract.
Correct. And it's a big issue. Like, you know, I wouldn't be shocked. Honestly, I wouldn't be shocked. They would love to move the Ferland deal and not have to deal with the LTI aspect of it. I wouldn't be shocked if they redouble their efforts. Like, that wouldn't surprise me just as these injuries pile up, and particularly if they're looking at some guys going into the season not necessarily being able to go on LTI because you want them to come back sooner than 10 games. Like, if like the Dermott, Besser, Mikhaev situations get into that sort of in-between where, like, they might miss 5 or 7 games, but probably not 10, or at least not for sure 10. I wouldn't be shocked if they're making calls right now trying to figure that out.
Phil DiGiuseppe should have made the team on opening night a year ago when there were more spots to be won. And is he going to make the team this year? I see a world where he's the 13th forward on opening night, right? And, to me, it kind of comes down to DiGiuseppe or Jason Dickinson, quite frankly, right? Because I think Dakota Joshua's got a spot. I think based on injuries, we're going to see Nils Höglander here one way or the other. And Curtis Lazar is obviously going to be here as well. So, to me, I think it comes down to those two. And right now, with Brock Besser out of the lineup, I think he winds up being on this team as the 13th forward. I like everything I've seen in training camp. I liked what I saw last Sunday, and I was fine with him here. I think he's got a place in the NHL right now. I mean, am I going to, you know, clamor for him that this is a travesty if he doesn't? He's always going to be a fringe guy. He's always going to be a player that every team tries to upgrade from. But I think he is a quality, serviceable fourth line player in this league and has done his part to this point. He's been given lots of opportunity. I think he's taken advantage of the role that they've asked him to play. You're not going to get a lot of points out of him, but I like Phil DiGiuseppe, and I liked him last year, so I think we're going to see him on opening night. The question is, are we going to see him once Brock Besser gets healthy?
Well, so I'm going to go with trending up. I liked what I saw tonight. You know, he was playing with Lockwood and Dries, but I thought his speed played. I thought he won a ton of battles. I thought he just had a lot of smart touches, a lot of productive touches overall in the game. But here's the reason that I think his stock is trending up mostly.
You're going to give me salary cap minutia.
Absolutely not. With Ilya Mikheyev's injury uncertainty, and as we saw play out this morning across Vancouver, that uncertainty is paramount. They need a speed. They need another burner. They need another guy who can move and stretch teams vertically, both on the PK, but just generally. If Mikheyev's not going to be ready, or Mikheyev's not going to be ready for opening night, you know, you need as much speed as you can get. Like,
You really think that's an issue, given what we eventually saw this morning? Intel.
Well, no, it's not about you know me. I don't really get into the like nitty gritty of reporting injuries until the playoffs. Like, I don't report out injuries, and the reason I don't is that it changes rapidly. I was actually really gratified in some ways that Vancouver fans got a taste of how fine the line between day to day skating tomorrow and, you know, week to week potential ACL issue can be, right? Like, the line is so fine, because how many times in this market have we seen a guy get hurt and then his timeline stretches out, you know, and then people are like, well, the organization lied, or like, what's going on with those team doctors? But it's like, sometimes, you know, a guy's hurt, they're swelling, they can't even be evaluated for 48 hours. The first test shows something. They get a second opinion. They get an additional test. It shows something else. The story changes, particularly because we're asking about these guys every single day, and it can take a bit of time for clarity to come from that.
All right, listen, from our listeners, is according to Joey Y, LOL, is anyone trending down according to Drancer? Sally H, seemingly not. Del J, weird positive. Drance is weird, Joey. This is a
okay,
whole...
Okay, I got some guys for you. challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. I mean, partly I'm grading guys on a curve, right? Like, I'm like, Linus Karlsson exceeded my desperately low expectations of his skating ability, so he's trending up. First of all, I want to point that out. Secondly, I've got a negative one for you. Danny DeKeyser, Farhan, trending up, trending down.
Well, his play has done...
VIPs, chime in.
His play has done nothing for me, right? Like, he's been... He looks the part. His play has done nothing. And again, if you were talking to me about the top seven defensemen on this team or opening night situation, hell no. I have not seen it at all. But again, as I talk about the depth this organization needs on the back end and the lack of anything of substance in the minors to come up and help this team. I mean, you know, and like, did Brad Hunt just get cut? Demoted, I should say?
Yeah, he did. Well, he did. He got cut in
by Colorado today
after a really tough game against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Like, to me, like, they don't have a guy like Brad Hunt there, right? Like, I would definitely sign Danny DeKeyser and to a minimum deal and put him in the minors if he doesn't get a better offer elsewhere, because I think he fits as a number 9 or a 10 guy just to give yourself organizational depth. But he's shown me nothing.
Yeah, I just don't see the speed, and I thought his play on the first goal on the PK was
not good.
Tough. Danny DeKeyser, I mean, look, Danny DeKeyser, Tucker Pullman, that's an adventure, even when the games don't matter. I don't want to see it when the games count. And
what
so,
do we do with Tucker Pullman here? Like, what is, you know, given his salary, he's not going anywhere. Like, what are the options with Tucker Pullman? Have you seen, okay, we think he can last. They're playing him a lot of minutes, and they're giving him that workload to see just how healthy he is. He's going to play in a lot of these preseason games, but... Is there anything to tell you he should be any more than a third pair?
No. No. I mean, of course not. No. Clearly not. But that's okay. He can play on the third pair, and he has some defensive value in that role.
Yeah, but if you put him next to Jack Rathbone, does that make you comfortable? I think that's going to bring out the worst in Rathbone. I mean, I'm so comfortable with Rathbone playing with Luke Shen, but having him play with Tucker Pullman, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in part because, you know, I didn't like Pullman with Quinn Hughes, and I don't like him with Jack Rathbone for the same reason, right? Like, his puck handling can be wasteful. He can take stuff off the table offensively, and so if you've got him with a higher end offensive guy, or at least a guy with the chops to potentially be that. I think that's, you know, I like him a lot more with like a defensive minded transitional guy like Travis Dermott. But again, I don't know what Dermott's status is. We haven't heard from him in a bit, and the Canucks don't really have an update on him, you know, sort of 48 hours since he left the ice at practice under the, you know, care and accompaniment of Canucks medical staff.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, we've been going for half an hour. Let's open the floor. You guys know how this works. You can raise your hand and get put into the queue. And when you do so, I will select in order the people raise their hands, some folks from the queue. We'll go for about 15, 20 minutes. And that's your opportunity to guide this conversation wherever you'd like to go. Farhan and I will take your questions, hear your commentary, and respond accordingly. And we'll tell you if you're trending up or down. I'm just kidding. You're all trending up. You're VIPs. And we appreciate you enormously for joining us. So let's get to the queue. We've had Perhez, who's had their hand up for a while here. I'm gonna call on them, and we'll start the Q&A portion of our VanCast Live episode. Perhez, do you have
Hello.
Me?
Yes, can you hear me? Hello.
We can, and you're coming in crystal clear. Great audio quality, bud.
Thank you, Thomas. I was wondering which defenders across the league under the age of 26 would potentially be interested in a trade. As it seems, the forward group is very strong in depth, but the D needs work if we ever want to get to be a contender.
Yep. Good point. All right. Thanks so much, Perhez, and thanks for your crisp audio quality. That was fantastic. I wish I sounded like that.
Me too.
Okay. So, yeah. So some guys that I think the Canucks would like. Well, I saw one tonight. A guy that I want to talk about a little bit because he was my favorite player on the ice for either team, and that's Will Borgen. Seattle Kraken right-handed defenseman, 6'3", 200 pounds, played long shifts at 3-on-3 and gave the Canucks nothing. Just like responsible, hard wrist shot, hard slap shot, does it all, meat and potatoes, but like enough skill to hold up 3-on-3, checking guys like Connor Garland up high in the defensive zone. Will Borgen. For me, Will Borgen is like the template. Like, that is the guy that I think the Canucks, that's the singular guy for me that I think the Canucks should go out and get proactively. As an RFA after this year, $900K against the cap this year. Like, I would pay a premium future to get him if I was the Canucks. I think he's that good. I think there's a chance that he's a perfect Quinn Hughes caddy. I loved his game tonight. I always liked his game. I liked his game last year, but I'm watching him play tonight. I'm like, this guy's awesome. Like,
where does your boy Ryan Clark tell you he fits in Seattle's depth chart?
Well, he's going to be the third defenseman at best because they've got Alexiak and they've got Larson, right? I mean, there's no way that he plays more than a third pair role for them. But I think on this team, like if you put him on in Vancouver, I think he'd be their second best right-handed defenseman day one. And I think there's some of that like sneaky top four upside, you know, like one of those guys who can glow up to be that type of player in their late 20s. So I bring him up because he's top of mind. Do I have a sort of ready-made list of defensemen under 26? I mean, I've made one in the past, so I'm sure I could just go refer to it. But, you know, I don't have sort of I don't have guys off the top of my head. I guess Ethan Bear is obviously a guy who's been linked to the Canucks in the very recent past. I have time for Josh Mahura in Anaheim. I think he's going to be in tough to make the roster, particularly if Oz, as they're calling him, although I know him as Zell, Olin Zellweger happens to make the Anaheim Ducks this season. I wouldn't be surprised if he does. That kid's the most dialed kid in the dub. I hear he lives in the gym, 6% body fat, like really just an impressive athlete. Bit undersized, but a perfect new NHL defenseman. Connor Clifton had a bad season in Boston last year, but I still have a ton of time for that player. Like him a lot. Carolina has just an embarrassment of right-handed defense prospects outside of Bear. A guy named Hamo Salmi is a standout for me. I thought he was fantastic at the World Juniors. Everyone, all Canucks fans were excited about Joni Yermos playing the neutral zone, but Hamo Salmi's decision-making in zone sort of made him for me the best player on that team in that tournament. Chicago's got nobody. Colorado's got everybody. I'm literally just going down the list at this point. Like, you know, it's hard to get young defensemen out of organizations, right? Like, if the Canucks were able to steal Sean Walker and Roy from just as like an example, like two sort of like, you know, middling-ish, Sean Walker and Matt Roy from the LA Kings, right? Like, it would make such a huge difference for this team. Now, it's so much easier said than done because these guys cost an arm and a leg, right? Like, you see Curtis, or what's his name? I don't remember his first name, but Lauzon, who got acquired by the Nashville Predators just ahead of the deadline last year. Like, that guy cost 2 seconds. 2 seconds. Like, that's sort of where this team's in tough, right? This Canucks team. They don't have the cap space to just, like, take problem guys off other teams' hands. They don't really have the assets or the prospect depth to trade futures for guys like Borgen, especially if they're going at Lauzon-type prices. You know, that's sort of what I've been talking about, where they're stuck. And I think the organization understands that enough that they're sort of looking at upgrading the defense corps as a multi-year project. So, you know, you end up sort of considering things like, you know, should they claim a guy like Victor Mete off waivers from the Toronto Maple Leafs when he's inevitably waived? Like, if the Pittsburgh Penguins waive a Chad Rua deal, is he the type of guy they should claim? Yeah, by the way, the answer is yes. I don't even think the Penguins will waive him because he probably wouldn't even make it to the Canucks. Like, you know, Pierre-Olivier Joseph, and we had a question about him earlier. Like, is it worth seeing if another change of scenery does him well, considering he's an ex-Emily Castonguay client and Rutherford traded for him in the recent past? Like, that wouldn't stun me. It wouldn't stun me if they give a player like that or a project-type guy like that a look. But I think that's sort of, you know, the Mete-Joseph tier is kind of where I think the Canucks can afford to play. I just don't think they can part with the types of futures that it would require to get a guy like a Borgen out of Seattle. All right, let's go on to Rohan K. Rohan, you're on the stage. Can you hear me? Hey, Rohan.
So I was curious if in the summer, do you know if management had any interest in trying to bring in like a proper defensive center? Because I was thinking about it, like, if the team gets injured, like, right now, Curtis Lazar would be our third-line center. And that doesn't seem like a great thing. And also, I'm part of, like, the faction that believes that Miller is better on the wing. So I was kind of curious if, you know, if they looked into that at all, or if they're really all in on this.
Yeah, that's a good question, Rohan. Thank you. I think they see Miller as a center for the most part. I think they value him that way. I think he proved to them that he can play that position last year. And so, you know, I think when they looked at their options, they really weren't enamored with the defensive options. I think they kicked the tires on some, you know, third line center type options, including Evan Rodriguez, over the course of the summer. Mostly when those guys became far cheaper later into August. I don't think it was a priority for them on the same magnitude that adding speed was, and adding Lazar as like a penalty-killing right-handed face-off man. You know, those were sort of top-line priorities ultimately, particularly because while, you know, I believe that they kicked the tires on some defenders, including Ilya Lyubushkin, you know, a right-handed guy who could presumably be an upgrade in their top four. At the end of the day, they just weren't as interested in those guys as they were in a guy like Mikhaev, who fit their age profile. They saw it as a future-oriented move, and they thought the need for speed was a desperate one with this group as constructed. And hard to disagree with them, right? Like, I'd say that's hard to disagree with them. Farhan, can you add anything to that?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I do believe that they're all in on their middle three that they've got right now, and they've got to feel pretty good about it. Could they get some additional help on the right side? You know, I'm sure that was on their to-do list, but not at the expense of speed. You know, I think it was a distant third when you talk about what they wanted to improve defensively, the speed element that they wanted to improve. I think that was third, and they're all in on this setup with these three down the middle.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from a big picture perspective, you know, maybe they will be looking for another center if, in fact, they move on from Bo Horvat, but that's not going to happen this season. So
yeah.
this is what it looks like, and I don't think they're pressing themselves to look at a potential down the road 3C.
Yeah.
You know, their top three now are three very, very good players. It allows them balance throughout the lineup that they haven't had previously. It allows them to spread out their scoring, and they've built around them. That's really what it looked like. They couldn't get the defense done, so what do? They added two key forwards to allow them to build a legitimate top nine and support all three centers.
Yeah, and I'd add, too, like, if there was the right 26- or 27-year-old defender who, like, profiled like a Will Borgen type available in unrestricted free agency this past summer, I think they would have taken a big swing at that guy using the money they ultimately invested in Mikhaev. I just don't think they saw that player available, and they saw the type of forward they thought they were desperate for in terms of the speed, in terms of the penalty kill utility, and that sort of brings us to today and explains some of the moves that they actually ended up making. All right, Dell, Jay, I'm calling you to the stage now. Dell, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm in here.
Hey, Dell, how are you?
Oh, my headphones are not working at all. Hi, sorry.
You sound great to us, so.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask about Kuzmenko, but since then, Rachel
is Dell still sounding great?
No, Dell is no longer sounding great, but she's asking about. Oh, we heard you say oh, so maybe just speak loudly. I think you're asking about Rachel Dory, though.
I am. Just because Bruce was talking about her on the coaching staff, and then the whispers have been that she's already gone. So I figured I'd ask.
Fair. Thanks, Del.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Rachel, by all indications, appears to be gone. Dismissed in some manner by the organization. You know, she was recording practices, especially special team sessions, in her role as assistant video coach. And certainly on Wednesday at practice, following sort of an evening of rumors that she'd been dismissed, she was no longer doing so. I mean, that is the case. Now, I don't have a good sense of why. I saw Rob Simpson confirmed it and reported it today. So, you know, this is coming. To this point, Bruce hasn't been asked about it. I'm sure he will be shortly, especially now that the club has confirmed it.
And Bruce was excited about her transitioning into that side of things. We talked to him at the golf tournament, and he thought she had a ton to offer.
That's an important thing he has to be asked is, like, do you still stand behind those comments, right? Because I think that would illustrate an awful lot about exactly where this organization is. Look, you know, I don't have the full story yet. It's one of those where, you know, I don't rush to be first in because we're talking about a relatively junior staffer. It's not like earth-shaking news, and sometimes these things can be a little bit more complicated behind the scenes, and you want to make sure you do it right and get the full story, and I'm not really there yet. So beyond sort of saying that, yeah, I've heard the same things, you know, I believe that to be true. I believe the rumors to be founded, and I'm still working on it because when it gets presented, I want to be able to present the full story as opposed to sort of telling it in an incomplete way. I just don't think that does anyone a service, particularly, you know, with how that hiring was trumpeted and Boudreaux's recent commentary. It certainly feels a part of the vibes that have, you know, become pretty weird, I think is putting it tactfully, downright awful around this team over the course of the past week, right? Whistler, coming out of Whistler, I was like, man, the vibes could not be more different this year than they were last year. And then two things happened in the last scrimmage. The first was that the team did a ceremonial puck drop before a scrimmage, a training camp scrimmage, and the carpet got stuck to the ice. And they had to, like, scrape it off, and it delayed the start of the thing for a bit. And then the ice quality was kind of mangled, and you could see some players go over and sort of skate over it and cut up the ice and try and get it all right. And it was just it's just weird. And then Besser wasn't there. And since then, it's like Besser's gone down. Mikhaev's gone down. The team's lost three preseason games, two at home to AHL-caliber lineups. You had the allegations, the deeply troubling allegations, you know, in sworn affidavits submitted in family court. Those affidavits are, of course, sealed, but were read in part to the public record by Talia Aquilini's lawyer, Claire Hunter. You know, and those allegations are deeply troubling, made by Francesco Aquilini's children. You have the Rachel Dory thing happening right on the eve of the season. I can't remember anyone being dismissed at this point in the season. Certainly in my time covering or working for a team, I'd call that highly unusual. You know, this last week has been a very, very strange one for this team, and sort of have kind of overshadowed any sense of optimism that certainly I had coming into this season. Like, I'm really sort of watching this team function now with a furrowed brow, particularly after Bruce Boudreau's, you know, deeply downtrodden availability tonight, which just seems so unusual considering it's a preseason game. You know, there's just something off right now around this organization as a whole. You know, deeply off in some respects, obviously, and in other respects, you know, sort of more subtly. The Dory, you know, issue is sort of an example of that for me, and I hope to be able to present more on it shortly.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to necessarily overreact. Surely there are a lot of things that are piling up. You're not wrong in that regard. I think the Francesco Aquilini situation is not something the players will necessarily wear. You know, I don't know that they're going to spend a lot of time getting asked about it. I think Bruce definitely will. You know, I think Jim Rutherford will probably get asked about it at some point here. I'm not sure the players necessarily have to wear it, but, you know, big picture, yeah, it's certainly part of the narrative. You know, and when I look at the injuries, it doesn't appear as though any of them are serious, Brock Besser notwithstanding, and even in Besser's case, he misses maybe a week of the regular season. You know, we're not expecting this to be a long-term situation. Does it impact his ability to start fast? Does it impact his ability to develop chemistry with his line mates? You know, which he already has as far as Miller's concerned. You know, potentially there's some of that, but I'm not prepared to necessarily overreact, right? And even in the Rachel Dory case, like, it all adds up to a string of negative press. But again, something the players aren't going to wear. It's something that's not going to be front of mind for them on any level.
Well, sure, but, I mean, you get to a point where things pile up, right? And it becomes like, what are we doing here? Like, you know, everything gets, you know, I guess here's the point, is a week ago it felt like this group now has no excuses. And now it's like,
they still have no excuses.
Okay.
They don't. I mean, if McCabe's back in a week,
there's a slow drip of BS that, if a hockey team puts up with enough of it, it begins to fill the cup. And I think we're very, very close to that point, particularly in this media market, and particularly given the gravity of the allegations made against Canucks chairman Francesco Aquilini. Want to comment on one thing, one comment. How many times do we have to prove preseason wins don't matter before we stop acting like they do, Drance? WTF from Devin G. Devin, I don't care at all. The results of the preseason game do not matter to me in the least. Frankly, the results of a single regular season game barely matter to me. It's more about how a team trends over 25, 30 games that begins to make me react one way or another. The reason that I'm bringing it up like it matters is Bruce Boudreau's availability tonight was shocking to me.
You've got me so up in arms now. I have got to watch this availability as soon as. I wonder, you know, the more I think about it as we're talking here, when they let it slip away in the third period, how much of that is tied to the questions around structure with this team defensively, right? Like, they got loose. Some of it, you know, in the case of Pearson and Hughes on the wall, giving the puck away, that was, you know, regular players. It wasn't guys that aren't necessarily going to be with them. It was certainly a much more veteran lineup than what Seattle iced. And again, we're not talking about necessarily results, but process. And the way that third period went down, their structure was bad. And I know it's only the second preseason game for most of them because, you know, it was a split squad on the first night. Could that have anything to do with it? Because that's the single biggest area that Bruce Boudreau has been challenged with improving.
Yep. Yep. Fair enough. All right. I think we can leave it there, huh?
Yeah, I think so. Had a good run for an hour here.
A good hour-long recap of a preseason game that didn't matter, except that it seemed to the Canucks head coach. Go watch that availability, Farhan. It was something.
I'm looking forward to it.
And put down your Mariners pom-poms. It's unbecoming of you.
Stop it. You know, it's funny because I get all this grief from, because obviously I'm trolling a bunch of Blue Jay fans on Twitter every now and again, and I certainly do want the Mariners to do well, and I do want the Blue Jays to do poorly. But all these Blue Jay fans come to me and tell me how good, you know, the Blue Jays are this and the Mariners are, they suck. The Blue Jays are 4-6 in their last 10. The Mariners are 5-5. Like, this is a turtle derby for the wild card spot in the American League. Like, let's be real, right? This is a snail's pace for all of these teams, which just shows you there's too many teams in the playoffs in baseball now.
Ah, I disagree with you. You know what? Wild card play-in games are the best, and
they're all losing. They're all losing their way in.
So what? Okay. So what? It's gonna be.
Hey, look, I'm happy the Mariners are gonna make it. Don't get me wrong. Like, but at the end of the day, nobody can sit there and thump their chest going into the playoffs on these wild card teams.
Oh no, and no Blue Jays fan would. I mean, it's been so anticlimactic for them. You know, this Mariners bullpen.
Yeah, it's not good.
Hey,
they need Julio back to outscore some of their problems. There's no doubt.
Yep. And I told you this would happen in our very last episode, but
oh yeah, because you can predict injuries. You were the smartest guy on the planet that you can predict injuries.
Julio was already out, man.
They brought him back too soon. They did bring him back too soon because he lasted a game and had to go in the 10-day DL.
I told you. I thought the Mariners were going to make it, but I knew that it was going to be a bumpy ride the rest of the season. I told you that.
But you know what? If they get all, look, stop it. You can't predict injuries. You can predict data. You can't predict injuries. You don't know these players well enough. Cut the bullshit.
He was already hurt when I said it, bud.
Yeah, I know. But look,
I didn't predict anything. I said he's hurt. That they're going to miss him. Well, okay.
They'll get them all back right in time, just in time to hit the reset button and go on a run.
I missed our spats, my friend. Nice to do an episode with you. Well, nice to do an episode with the VIPs.
That's the best part. I got to do an episode with you. We will, be on just a maniacal laugh on a promo.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Hope you enjoyed. We'll do this again in a couple weeks. Probably, you know what? Maybe we'll do it after the first game of the year. Probably the next day after the first game of the year. We'll jump on one of these, and the VIPs can have their say about how the Canucks look when the games really matter. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for playing Trending Up, Trending Down with us. And thank you for putting up with our dumb baseball arguments. We appreciate it. For Drancer and Farhan, this has been the Live Room Fancast. We'll do it again soon. Cheers.